Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Very atypical Monday. It is a federal holiday honoring the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It is also coinciding with Inauguration Day in our nation's capital. And we have a lot going on otherwise, including a polar vortex. And that said, our resident political analyst, Lenny McAllister, is in studio. First of all, how was your journey here? Coming from the South?
Well, it was not a lot of paved roads coming in, and then the parkway wasn't that bad. So I come in from the East suburbs, and I usually come to the South to drop my kid off at school. They're off from school today. Secondary roads are just not paved. Parkway was not that bad. Secondary roads are just not paved. And it seems like it's a recurring theme over the last several weeks.
Yeah, and I think based on salt usage in previous winters where we've had light snowfalls, remember last year's biggest single snow day was 3.3 inches at Pittsburgh International anyway, on a day in February. And yeah, we've had snow almost every single day to some degree, even if it's just been a coating or a skim coating. So how many inches of snow would you say you have where you live?
I shoveled last night. Thought I was done shoveling, woke up and there was another 2 to 3 inches on my car and on the walkway just from 10 o'clock last night to when I woke up to drive down here.
Well, it's been a challenge. I'm glad you're here, especially on a holiday where all the kids are off school, and it looks like many of the schools will be on remote instruction because of the low temperatures, you know, not putting kids out to walk to school or at school buses, bus stops when it's, you know, feels like 10 below, could be up to 20 below, and the next few days are going to be critical.
So we never used the word polar vortex when you and I were going to school. That is now part of our lexicon, that kids actually know what the heck that means. That's something we just would not say. That would sound like something out of a cartoon with the Justice League. Not something that we would experience when kids go to school in the morning.
Well, to give you some example, this potential for snow goes all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, yep, Texas, all the way across Louisiana and New Orleans, right down to even northern Florida could see some snow because it's that cold across the lower 48. So I appreciate you finding your way here. It is warm in the studio.
It definitely is. Going.
So much going on today, and there'll be a lot of fallout no matter what happens. But the breaking news, as we all just heard, were the last second pardons from Joe Biden for, in particular, Dr. Fauci, who was with multiple administrations, yep, including Donald Trump's, yep, first 4 years, and they kind of, I guess, went separate ways, and there was talk about them going after Dr. Fauci, for starters, and then the January 6th committee members, and the former defense secretary, and then Liz Cheney, who turned in that process of the January 6th committee meeting. So what do you make of these last-minute pardons?
It's wise in regards to what they need personally. It's sad in regards to where we are as a nation. Anytime retribution is an agenda item for anybody in an executive position. And that's, you know, private business, that's, you know, a public business, that's a school board, that's a principal, that's a mayor, all the way up to now the president of the United States. If retribution is an agenda item or something that is discussed, you're not in a good place with your group, your civic group, your community group, your church, whatever the case may be. And to have this play out at the highest levels of our country, where this has to happen because of the political ramifications that could come about as a result, I don't think enough Americans realize what we're risking. And I think another thing, if you talk about retribution, you go to what's going to, you know, what's been talked about happening tomorrow in Chicago with the immigration raid. And again, why Chicago? Yes, there's an immigration problem in Chicago, but it's also because of the pushback that came from Chicago politicians, Democratic politicians, the mayor of Chicago. When you start having actions that seem to be targeted based on personality and payback, you're not in a good place morally and ethically to be the type of civic leader that you want to be for not only your country and your countrymen, but for the world as well.
Donald Trump has said, and he said it yesterday, repeated it, that he believes he got elected the first time in large part due to his close the border, you know, border control. And he believed this election, the same thing. That was the key for him, was to secure the borders. So how do you gently go about doing that?
One, you have to make sure that the actual border of the United States, both the southern border and the northern border, are secure. You can use technology for that. You can put additional resources to that. Building the wall like he campaigned on in 2016, the cost of that and even the effectiveness of that had been debated for years. That's probably the first thing. The second thing is there are already immigration laws on the books that people have been able to skirt through and have not, and people have been able to ignore for years. You have to go back to reinforcing those. You have to make the courts more efficient. And that kind of goes back to the early 2024 legislation that was bipartisan that was going to address that. Now, of course, the critique of that was the Biden administration took too long to put that into place. But that law would have made the courts more efficient to adjudicate illegal immigration cases. Between the actual resources on the borders and making the process better and faster, that's how you're going to get people that are dangerous out of the country quicker, but also streamline the immigration process so that people that could harm the United States aren't in the United States illegally.
We're with Lenny McAllister. I want to ask you about over 200 executive orders expected to be signed, maybe in day one when he goes to the Oval Office to take over officially tomorrow after today's inauguration and the balls, the three inauguration balls they're having and all the pomp and circumstance of the day. What comes next with Lenny McAllister and the Big K Morning Show? McAllister in studio here on the Big K Morning Show. There was a lot made about TikTok at the end of the week. And then, of course, for a short period of time, they shut themselves down. Even though the Supreme Court ruled that it could be shut down legally, and then Biden said he wasn't going to enforce it, they voluntarily turned it off for a while, but it's back on. And here's what Donald Trump said about that yesterday.
We went on TikTok, and Republicans have never won the young vote, the youth vote. They win a lot of votes, but they never won the youth vote. We won the youth vote by 36 points. So I like TikTok.
So it sounds like that's not going away. Not that that's the biggest issue facing the country. But I'm curious if they'll find a way to talk to Donald Trump about, since TikTok is China, he wants to have a joint venture, by the way, with TikTok in the United States, but with Nippon Steel.
I was going to go the same exact place. It's amazing. We can just find, you know, several million votes that indicate that Nippon Steel is actually a good deal after all. Maybe he'll realize that he won the youth vote with Nippon Steel and reverse his position on that as well. Hearing the soundbite kind of, and I've made this argument previously, Larry, if you have a national security concern with whether it's TikTok or it's Nippon Steel. Tell us what it is. At least we heard what it was with TikTok, okay? It's data. It's selling the data. It's the conditions that you have to follow in order to be on the platform that adhere more to the Communist Party of China versus the United States of America. We get that. We've never heard that with Nippon Steel. And to hear that soundbite goes back to the whole politicization of what national security interests are. And that's what's problematic, again, because we're not talking about objective items. We're talking about subjectivity based on how we feel or how it benefits individuals and not the country. This seems to be another example of that.
Well, for our region, as you know, I hope they find a way to make it work for us here in southwestern Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, so we mentioned immigration. Obviously, that's top of the page on Donald Trump's checklist of things that he wants to take care of. Day one, he also talked about ending the war in Ukraine. And what other items are on that list where he would sign 200 executive orders?
I think a lot of what these orders are going to be is, you have to understand that some of them are going to be fluff. Like, for example, I'm going to direct every department to lower inflation. Well, I guarantee you that Joe Biden did that. I guarantee you that President Obama did that. They may not have done it with a whole bunch of executive orders, but the flurry of those orders being put into place looks like activity, stuff getting done. And again, we know that Donald Trump is very much into optics. That will help with that. Now, there are also going to be some things that will either streamline some issues, reverse some Biden policies. I mean, the back and forth, for example, with the Mexico City policy always goes back and forth. A Republican president gets in, they reinforce what Reagan initially put into place. A Democrat gets in and they rescind it. And that goes back and forth. That will likely be one of those policies. But you will probably see some executive orders going into play to reverse some of Biden's protection of certain lands to be drilled for energy. You'll probably see some executive orders that will go into place that will put a different philosophy in place when it comes to energy policy, maybe education policy, maybe spending policy. There's going to be an attempt to reverse a lot of the things that Joe Biden put into place over the last couple of months on his way out the door.
And that's pretty typical, right, when there's a change of party.
Yes, and what makes this different, Larry, is the fact that you look at Biden's bevy of activity going out the door over the last month in particular. Donald Trump's going to try as much as possible to reverse that. Usually, you see a little bit of a gentle, congenial handshake between two presidents, even if it's presidents from opposite parties. We don't have that right now. So you're going to see a bigger pendulum swing from one to another, and the executive orders indicate that.
In tradition, the outgoing president and his wife greet the incoming president and his wife for tea this morning in the White House. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. That said, what else are the high priorities that you think Donald Trump will move on in addition to?
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts. That was, you took the words right out of my mouth. He ran on his inflation, ability to lower inflation, and tax cuts. What might we see?
I think that they're going to try to get tax cuts through the House of Representatives and through the Senate by way of reconciliation, budget reconciliation, which is a misdirection way to get it passed. And with that being said, if that happens, coupled with the tariffs, I mean, we've already seen a report from the Wall Street Journal. I reported this yesterday on my show, that inflation is going to go up even more than they expect. It's going to go up. Consumer spending or the rate of inflation will go up close to 3%, which is even higher than what they thought it would go up in October, which means that the very people that were looking for relief from a new Trump administration might be getting squeezed with higher cost because of the tariffs and more debt because of the tax cuts. So it's something to pay attention to if he's able to get that through within the first 90 to 120 days.
Part of what Elon Musk is tasked with doing, not officially as a cabinet member, but as a, how would you classify?
Senior advisor?
Yeah, advisor role. about cutting waste in the federal government. It'll be interesting to see, because there's an equal and opposite reaction. If you cut taxes, you have to cut spending. So we'll see.
And what ends up being targeted? What do they think is vital?
More to come. Lenny McAllister in studio. Donald Trump said at some point he wants to dismantle the federal education platform that has existed for many years.
The Department of Education has been around since 1979, and it provides a lot of services that people take for granted now. A learning plan, in essence, where they need a specialized education plan in order to get through. It's an individualized education plan to get them through the day, because they learn different or they have a learning disability or the like. That's a program that has federal protection behind it. There are different designations of students that, including, I mean, things we take for granted. It's, you know, 100 years ago, we didn't have laws for kids that were in wheelchairs. We have laws for people that were in wheelchairs. People forget that. I grew up in a time, you grew up in a time where, you know, there was not designated parking spots for people in wheelchairs. Now, take that to education. It hasn't been that long where some of the protections that people count on for their kids were there. If you start stripping that away through the federal Department of Education, you leave it to the states. Sometimes those decisions are going to be made based on economics. We don't have enough money. If you're the state of Mississippi and you don't have that much money in your education system, those things may be left behind. Or you take a highly unionized state like Pennsylvania, Ohio, and others and say, look, we're so emboldened to pensions, we don't have enough money to put it into these new programs. You may have a problem with your kid in fifth, sixth, seventh grade because you've been counting on the federal government to provide some support for that for years. And it might not be doing so in 12 to 18 months if the plans that Donald Trump and others campaigned on in 2024 come to fruition.
He said flat out he wanted to get rid of the Department of Education on the federal level. And I'm sure that would be a process, obviously, that wouldn't be just a one-day deal where, okay, there's no more federal Department of Education. However, there were a lot of federal monies related to other things that aren't going to be there that you pointed out to me schools counted on, even though they knew the money was going to dry up, and they expanded things at a time when maybe they shouldn't have.
Yeah, COVID funding has run out. It's called ESSER, and it's that emergency spending that districts across the country got over the course of the last several years based on COVID. Well, that money has dried out. They had a certain deadline. If you don't spend it, you don't get it. And a lot of districts, unfortunately, and unwisely, hired teachers and other administrators based on temporary funding, knowing that that money was going to run out. Now, they were probably hoping that at some point in time, a presidential administration, a Harris administration, for example, or a second Biden administration, would do something to bridge between ESSER funding, that emergency funding, and something after that that will allow them to survive. Well, with the Trump administration at the federal level now, that's not going to transpire. So for a lot of districts, that might mean increased local taxes to try to fill the gap, or it's going to mean a shedding of services or personnel, both of which are going to hurt kids at some point in time. Couple that with the problems that we're already having in, you know, K through 12 education, and it can make some bad situations get a lot worse pretty quickly.
And he said he's going to do a lot of this stuff in short order, so we'll see. What else is on the radar that you anticipate change?
We really need to focus on what happens internationally. And let's go back to what's going on in Israel and the Gaza Strip. The calculus has changed there now, too. It's not a Biden administration that's caught between a rock and a hard place. It's going to be a Trump administration that's going to look at the Israelis and say, look, do what you need to do to eliminate your enemy. And if that means crossing some lines, Donald Trump is not going to be as critical as the Biden administration has been. We already mentioned Ukraine as well. It's very interesting that some of the tone that we've seen from Donald Trump, let's annex Greenland. That's the same mindset that Vladimir Putin has with Ukraine. He looks at it as it's been part of the Soviet Union. It's been disputed as being part of Russia for centuries. And we don't want NATO on our doorstep. That was the rationale in 2022 for Putin to go into Ukraine. If you take that mindset and you apply it to Donald Trump with this talk about Greenland and the Panama Canal, which we haven't talked about in 2 weeks because we've been talking about other things, there's a similarity there that is not what you usually hear from an American president in modern times. We need to watch and see how that plays out. Is it bluster or their actual plans? And then do those plans mirror what we're seeing around the world that has caused instability? Those are things that will be overlooked because of the domestic issues that we cannot stop tracking.
And that said, it is Inauguration Day as the Trumps arrive at St. John's Church in our nation's capital. Part of the process, he's with the First Lady Melania. And coming up, I also want to ask you about Martin Luther King Day, an important federal holiday. We're with Lenny McAllister next on the Big K Morning Show. Shared with Lenny McAllister this hour and every Monday. Lenny joins us to talk about issues surrounding politics, but not just politics. It is a federal holiday recognizing the works and effort of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What does this day mean for you?
This day in particular is an interesting intersection of where we are as Americans. It's the inauguration of Donald Trump, who 4 years ago at this time inspired an insurrection at the Capitol, and that political violence coupled with the off-year's chaos that transpired as a result of that, 4 years later, he's back in the White House. Some of the most targeted language that we have heard over the last several years is DEI as a slur, attacks on DEI programs, to the point where corporations are now pulling them. You heard Pete Hegseth repeatedly talk about woke, and woke was supposed to be aware of injustice around you. Now it's a slur. You look at the rhetoric around the presidential campaign in 2024, including slurs against the first black woman to run as a major party candidate nominee for the presidency. And you think about the movement that inspired that is going to be the movement that's, in essence, taking the oath of office by way of Donald Trump in a couple of hours. And it is the contrast of what Dr. King stood for. I think that this MLK Day in particular needs to be one of reflection where we really, really recommit to being better than what we've been when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, when it comes to being awake and aware of injustice around us, and injustice for everybody, not just for African Americans, for all people in our country and even elsewhere. And I think that we really need to reflect upon the rhetoric, because if Dr. King was anything, he was an intellectual and he was eloquent, and we're living in times where eloquence, intellectualism, those are two things that are just not valued in today's America. And I think he would shed many tears, but also have a righteous indignation and rage in regards to where we are going. And I think those are the things that this MLK Day mean for me, and I think it means for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans as well.
Lenny, appreciate your honesty and being here today. We will talk to you next Monday.
I look forward to it, Larry. You stay warm. I'm going to try to do the same.
Who knows what will happen between here and there.